Hello there, and welcome to Words on Wednesday with Sylvia Rosenblum. That's me, and this is a podcast channel that features all the conversations from my program Arts Wednesday right here on Eastside Radio, 89.7 on your FM dial, or if you're listening to this, you know very well, it's from our wonderful website, eastsidefm.org. Enjoy. Here we are. We're up to part five from the quantum to the cosmos with Professor Geraint Lewis, who I'm pleased to say once again joins us in the studio. How nice to see you.
Hi there.
Right, we're up to part five, and as you promised last time, we're going to talk about the future of a quantum cosmos. We've looked at a cosmos present, we've looked at a cosmos future, and now we're going to look at the future of a quantum cosmos.
Right.
What does that one mean?
Okay, so let's set the scene, okay? So the 1900s, the 20th century was a giant revolution in physics, right? Our understanding of the universe leaps and bounds, right? And you know, the 1920s, 1930s, there was changes in our understanding of the universe like we've never seen before. But as I mentioned previously, what we ended up with is wonderful mathematics that allows us to describe the universe. But we don't have a single framework. Physicists are generally lazy, right? We want to learn as little as possible, right? So you want a minimal number of equations. But what we ended up with on one side, to understand gravity, we have Einstein's general theory of relativity, which talks about curvy and bendy space-time. And on the other side, we've got quantum mechanics, which talks about how atoms interact and how light behaves and all this kind of stuff. And they're written in effectively two different mathematical languages. They just do not really work together. And there's this dream. I mean, it really is a dream that at some level we haven't quite gotten to the bottom of both these theories. That if we can really get into the guts, we'll find that they are actually the same thing, and underlying it there's a single framework, a language, etc. So we could only have to learn one thing that will incorporate gravity and quantum mechanics together. And this search has been going on for 100 years. Not long after Einstein published his general theory of relativity in 1916, people were already asking the question about whether they could extend his mathematics to include electromagnetism, light, and all these other things. And it failed. And most physicists have a go at it. They think, I'll be the one. So, and it's professional physicists, amateur physicists, everyone thinks I'll be the one. And even Einstein, right? Einstein, when he in his older life, he'd become the typical dinosaur kind of thing, he was still on this mission, apparently on his deathbed, of trying to come up with mathematics to make everything
mesh these two things, gravity and quantum mechanics.
Exactly. And we are still trying to do this today. And I have been in this game now for, I started my undergraduate degree in 1987. I remember being told, as I started my degree, any second now, it's going to be cracked any second now. And here we are a little while later, and it hasn't happened.
Right.
Yeah.
So what we're looking for in the future of a quantum cosmos is when we're able to mesh these two, which was, of course, the raison d'etre behind your book that's given rise to this series, where your colleague, who's a quantum mechanic, do we call him?
Yeah, quantum mechanic. He'd be happy with that. Chris Ferrier at UTS.
Yes. And you're the astrophysicist, and the two of you saying, okay, where do we come together?
Yeah.
But you tell us that there are too many suspects and too few clues.
Yes. So let's think about how science works, right? So, science is describing the natural world, and you do that via experiments, etc. So let's think about how you experiment on quantum mechanics. Like in the old days, you would do experiments in your laboratory, but now those experiments have grown and grown and grown, and you've gotten to the state where you've got something like the Large Hadron Collider at CERN that smashes particles together. And to describe how those particles interact, you use quantum mechanics. So when they're smashing particles, they're making predictions about what's going to come flying out of the collisions, right? And up until, let's see, what was it? It was 2012, was the discovery of the Higgs boson, I think it was, right? That's when they found that particular particle. That was all written in the mathematics of quantum mechanics, etc. And it works. It works terrifyingly well. They can predict what's going to come out. Not they can't make, I'm going to predict there will be this electron and that proton, but in a statistical sense, they know what's going to come out of their experiment. It works incredibly well. In fact, they've done experiments in quantum mechanics where the theoretical predictions and the actual experiment themselves agree to 12 decimal places.
Wow, that's pretty... That's pretty accurate, isn't it?
That's shockingly good, right? Now, the flip side of the coin is gravity and relativity. And again, it works incredibly well, right? It just works. When we try to describe the overall universe, how light travels the universe, etc., we use Einstein's general theory, it works. And of course, in 2016, we had the discovery of gravitational waves. So, you know, these are these big detectors in the US, LIGO, the Laser Interferometry Gravitational Observatory, I think it stands for. And of course, what they were looking for is essentially the shaking of space and time due to violent events in the universe. And I remember I got up in the middle of the night to watch the press conference, and they put up the discovery, right? And the discovery is just a wiggly line that sort of grows in intensity and then dies away again. And I looked at that and I just went, yep, that's it. That's a gravitational wave, because over the 100 years since Einstein predicted them, people had been calculating what kind of signatures are we going to see. And the predictions were, you're going to see it's going to increase again, and then it's going to decrease again. Perfect.
So once you saw it on the LIGO,
yeah,
it was exactly as predicted.
Exactly as predicted. So now you've got these two theories that work incredibly well, but they just don't mesh together. So what you do as a scientist is you look for places where they don't work. Where are the cracks in the theory?
Right.
Okay. So some of your listeners might follow some science news every so often, and like they might see that the particle physicists get very excited if there's a potential anomaly that they see
right,
at CERN.
Right, yeah.
So you know they're measuring their collisions, and they might go, oh, there's something there that might not fit. And it, then you know you get more data, and it goes away. And similarly with the gravitational waves, everyone's looking, you know, they're now looking at the forms of the waves that they're coming in, and they're looking for, are there deviations? Are these deviations? And there's a buzzword, a buzz phrase, I should say. The buzz phrase is new physics. Is this a sign of new physics?
Because if you find an anomaly either in the one or in the other, then you've got another avenue to get in.
Precisely. You should be a scientist. that's exactly the point. But we can't find the cracks in terms of the data. Now,
Because there are so few of them. Because it's working so well.
It is working so well. And in fact, what's happening now is the particle physicists, because what they want to do is they want to do more collisions, but at higher energies. So, you know, they've already built the Large Hadron Collider, which is around 30 kilometers. They're now talking about the next generation, which is going to be 100 kilometers.
Wow.
Right? Because what you need to do is you need to get these things getting... I mean, they're already traveling at 0.9999% the speed of light. They want to add more decimal places in there.
Maybe even faster.
Even faster.
So the reactions are even more... extreme.
Yep. And in fact, a lot of particle physicists are also now turning to the heavens, because we see violent and energetic events in the universe, and they're saying, well, these are like natural particle physics experiments. And so can we understand what's going on
right.
and see if there's clues there?
Instead of looking in the laboratory, let's look in the real world.
That's right. But on the flip side, what is kind of interesting, of course, is that the theoreticians haven't been lazy. Right? They have been producing theories, theory after theory after theory. And some of them, you know, get ruled out very quickly because, you know, you can imagine what it's like. Some people spend years on their mathematics and then they compare it to an experiment and it's dashed. So, you know, it goes straight into the bin.
That's slit your throat material, yeah. I would think. How tragic is that? Years.
Yeah.
On an equation you have to throw out.
Yeah.
Tell me about supersymmetry and superstrings.
Yes. So these are a few of the ideas that people have put forward, right? So when I say ideas, what they're trying to do is imagine we've got our mathematics. Let's imagine that we've got an equation, 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah, this right. isn't one of the ones that we're going to throw in the bin. This is an equation that's working.
It is an equation. Well, it works mathematically. We can get lots of stuff to work mathematically, but does it describe the universe, right?
Right.
Because that's the ultimate arbiter here. If you can't describe the universe, then you're just doing recreational mathematics.
Right.
So you're thinking, how do I expand this mathematics to put new pieces in there? So, you know, you could do 1 plus 1 plus 1 minus 1 equals, and maybe that adding one and subtracting one, that gives me a new clue to what's in my mathematics. So this is what people are trying to do, right? You're trying to extend your mathematical framework, and you hope that you're extended in the right direction. Because if you can imagine, there's almost an infinite number of ways that you could push equations, right? Especially when they're complicated equations.
Right.
So supersymmetry is one of these ideas, is that you can make the mathematics of particles simpler by putting in a symmetry, by basically putting up a mirror. So, you know, I've mentioned that we've got electrons and quarks. So quarks are the things that make up the protons and neutrons. This proposes extending that picture so you have additional particles, which are called selectrons and squarks for symmetric particles. And to explain why this makes things easer, we would be here for a long gap, right?
But let's accept it as a given.
Yeah. But the problem is that even though it makes the mathematics easier, we could say, oh, we can unite things, we've never found a selectron or a squark or any other supersymmetric particle. But people keep pushing the maths and saying, oh, if we have a bit more energy at CERN. Superstrings is another one of those ideas which I can express it in words, but mathematically it is, you know, books.
It's another idea that some mathematicians have come up with.
Yes.
And we're still waiting to see.
Yes.
Are they describing the universe or aren't they? They're showing very creative scientific mathematical skill.
Yes.
But we don't know yet whether they're describing the universe. Mm. Tell me about knitting yourself a universe. That sounds, I think, a lot of the knitters out there say, right, let's get out the needles.
Yeah, so some people have put forward other ideas like there's loop quantum gravity, etc. They've all got you know, buzzy kinds of names. Where, in fact, they've pushed the idea of quantum mechanics even harder. And they've basically not just chopped up things into particles. So you've got, you know, electrons and protons and quarks and photons. But then you start to chop up space and time themselves.
Right.
So you make space and time discrete.
Right.
Okay? So what they're effectively saying is that the reality we experience, we already know that our reality is somewhat fake because we know that we're made of atoms, etc. They're saying that even the reality of space and time are somewhat fake because they are actually made up of fundamental grains of space and time, right? And the way that loop quantum gravity works, the loop in there is effectively, you can think about it a little bit like you are knitting the universe. The universe is space and time, comes together.
Just loop together.
Loop together. And of course, the loop in there is a thick textbook of mathematics, exactly what that loop in means. But that space and time effectively are emerging as these things knit themselves together to give you a universe around you.
So there's no shortage of fertile ideas. And scientists, be they quantum mechanics or be they traditional physicists, trying to imagine and work out a way that our universe works. What about, are we on the right path, or is still at this sort of speculative stage where all these great minds dreaming up wonderful theories?
We do not know if we're on the right path. I mean, as I already mentioned, the notion of that we can join these things together, something called, you know, a theory of everything, is a dream. And one day we might have to, you know, there's a couple of things that we might have to admit. We might have to admit that it may not be that way. The universe might just be different in terms of gravity than the other forces. We just have to live with it. The other thing that we might have to eventually admit is that, you know, our slightly evolved monkey brains are just not capable of thinking, imagining, coming up with the mathematics to account for all that stuff.
So in a century or two or never, there might be another Einstein with another brain that can look at the world in a completely different way, in a unique way, and say, uh-huh, I got it.
And absolutely. And, you know, one of the great things, of course, is that science is international. And, you know, I firmly believe that the next Einstein will not be an older white man. Right? We don't know where on the planet they will come from, but somebody will have an idea and we might just crack this problem.
What a wonderful, wonderful thought. Oh, well, that's been the end of part five, Geraint. Well, next time, sadly, we'll be up to the last part of this series. And there we're going to face the cosmic mysteries. Until then, thanks for today. That's been part five of From the Quantum to the Cosmos with my most special guest, Professor Geraint Lewis. You've just been listening to a podcast from Words on Wednesday with Sylvia Rosenblum. If you'd like to subscribe to this series, just stay on the page where you are and you'll see at the top line a subscribe to Words on Wednesday. Click on that and you're in business. Thanks for listening.